Really awesome to be back here at the Spiritual Light Center. As Beverly alluded, I've been coming here now. Richard asked me when we met, and I'm pretty sure that it was Easter 2008 that I came here and I spoke for the first time. Is that feedback? Is that okay? All right, that's normal. Okay, I just wanted to check. I had received a call from Clark's wife, and I can't think of her name right now. Carolyn, yes. Okay, Carolyn Kell called me and invited me to come and speak, and she said, would you come on Easter Sunday? And I was like, as long as I don't have to talk about Jesus, we're good. Today I will talk about Jesus, but not this day. Today I will actually do that. So we're growing. But you guys helped me cut my teeth and learning how to speak and developing that part of myself as a minister. Also, as Beverly mentioned, we have a Science of Mind community in Silva, which is Open Door Center for Spiritual Living. If you want to know more, just to see almost anybody who's here, who's been here for a while. And for those of you who haven't been here or who are new, it's really nice to meet you. There are never any strangers, just friends you haven't met before, right? So, yes. Oh. Am I wiggling too much? I told you I would have trouble being still. So no wiggling of good luck, okay? So as we mentioned, I'm going to talk today about the Ten Commandments. And I know that we're all familiar with the Ten Commandments. We've heard of them. Most of us here in these United States grew up probably in some kind of mainstream Christian or in a Jewish situation where we heard the teaching of the Ten Commandments as they are typically taught in those circles. Today what we're going to do is a little different because it involves looking at the metaphysical or what we might call metaphorical or symbolic meaning. And what we understand when we study really any sacred text, this is true for the Bible, it's true for the Old Testament and the New, that often these kinds of documents are written in metaphor. There's a message, but then there's also a message that is deeper, that is behind the message. So it's that message, that layer of messaging that we're going to look at today. One of the funnest things I've ever done was years ago in a class at another center, we took the Ten Commandments as a homework assignment, and we went home and we pondered them and we came back with our meaning. And, you know, to me, that is truly how sacred lesson, sacred message is meant to be delved into. Because as the reading that Beverly shared so well acknowledged, that divine stuff, that wisdom isn't out there. It isn't up here. It isn't off somewhere else. It lives right here. It speaks to us constantly. And so truly our work always in this world of spiritual beings is going to be to listen, to take in things, not just at face value, but to take them within, perhaps into our quiet time or prayer time, and see where they lead us. You know, there is no ceiling here. We're talking about God. There's no limit. So a few things about the Ten Commandments of Moses, and like I said, I'm going to try to move on here. It is a rather lengthy topic. But there are some interesting things about Moses that are important. I know that all of you understand there was a time Moses was wandering around in the desert and he was kind of lost and he got this message to go up to the mountain and have, you know, so to speak, a word of prayer with God. So he heeded that message. He went up the mountain and he was the recipient of two stone tablets with 10 suggestions. These were the laws, the recommendations by which the Jewish people were to live. So that was just some, you know, some background there. And then we also understand about Moses, about his early years, that he was placed as an infant into a basket of reeds and sent down the Nile by his biological mother. She was a maidservant. And she did this because the big boss in charge, the Pharaoh, had mandated that all baby boys would be slaughtered. she felt her child had a better chance going down the Nile on a basket than he did with the Pharaoh and his army. Lo and behold, though, the joke was on the Pharaoh, because what happened was that it was his daughter, the Pharaoh's daughter, who found the baby, brought him to the shore, and made the decision to raise him as her own. And it was his own biological mother that was the maidservant of the Pharaoh's daughter. So nobody knew. She got to raise her child herself. And to me, there's a huge message inherent that is so poignantly important for us today. That is that no matter what it looks like on the surface, good is afoot. Good stuff is going to happen. Okay, we can look at the world and think, oh no, atom bombs and nuclear this and illness that and crazy, oh my God, crazy politicians don't even go there, right? Okay, but if we just recognize God hasn't left the room, God isn't dead, there's something powerful behind all of this, that it is ever and always speaking to us and at work behind the scenes, much more so than that guy in Wizard of Oz, right? Yeah, if we remember that, we truly don't have to worry too much. So, Moses, the word, when we go back to Hebrew terminology, means to extract, to draw out of, and specifically to release or to draw out of from the water, okay? Very, again, meaningful in the face of Moses being sent down the river, okay, in a little basket. That piece is important. Water is important. Water often in dream world or in dream terminology, in metaphysics or symbology, represents that universal mind. That is the consciousness that is always surrounding us. And really, that universal mind is kind of a two-way street. It's always going back and forth. We're always sending stuff out in the form of our thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. They're going out into the world. They truly are what paved the way for what is next to come in our lives. We understand that as the law of attraction, right? That universal mind is also a two-way street in that we're always receiving information from it. I know most of you have had the experience where the phone rang, and before you answered it, you knew. You didn't even look. But you knew who was on the other end. That happens to me almost daily. What it is that I know is that that is some workings of that universal mind. Whoever that is that's calling me, their consciousness is bumping up against mine, bumping up against my awareness, and I'm heeding the knock at the door, so to speak. That happens to all of us. So that water represents that universal mind. It's always flowing, going in every direction. Material is always coming to us from it, and we're always sending things back to it. Now, it's said that Moses went up the mountain to have that word of prayer with God. He went up Mount Sinai. Going up the mountain represents going into a place of higher consciousness, a place where we feel a deeper connection. How many of you meditate? Sure, if you meditate or you pray, even if you just sit quietly for a few minutes, often, again, to allude to the reading that Beverly shared, that, by the way, is beautiful. I don't think I've ever heard the whole thing before. She talked about when we get ourselves out of the way, that divine stuff is there for us. We can feel it and touch it. That's that higher consciousness. It doesn't have to be some woo-woo filled with color and light. Although, I would take that too. I don't know about any of you. We're old hippies, right? I'll do the colors and the lights. They're fun too. I don't know what I did here. Oh, there we go. Maybe it just wiggled. I wiggled too much. How about that? But when we will benefit from aligning anew every thought that we have with the truth, and that's with a capital T, the truth that we find that lives within us. It's that truth that is within. When drawn out, it leads us out of bondage. What was the story that we consistently see through Moses' life? Out of bondage, mother sets him free. Out of bondage, brought information, brought words of prayer and guidance through the darkness of his stumbles in I always want to think he's in the jungle. For me, it's in the jungles of my mind, in the desert, right? It is these truths that take us to a place called the promised land, that land of milk and honey. This can be interpreted as a consciousness that embodies divine fulfillment. The message, in short, if you want a joyous life filled with abundance and opulence, with connection with each other, with vibrant, joyous health and things like that, we will learn to get still and to listen to that little voice within. And I believe that's exactly what the first commandment is about. I am the Lord thy God, thou shalt have no other gods before me. Really, I believe this tells us that the primary relationship we have must be between that little S self. That's the barber that goes out, gets up and goes to work every day, feeds the cat, cleans up the litter, pays the bills, does the job, blah, blah, blah. And that big S, no, there ain't no word in that word, A in that word, big S self. It's the conversation that's always going on between little me, who's usually nit, 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 and big me, who's going, it's okay. I got this. I never let it go. And you're really going to be all right, whether you want to or not, okay? Here, what we understand is that God is inherently present in everything. Perhaps the underlying wisdom of this commandment is that we need to listen. We just need to shut it, be still, and know that within there is divinity. When we hear that voice, when we allow it to emerge and speak to us, when we sit in the stillness and hear the smallness, what we find is greatness. Thus we learn first and foremost the relationship we must have is with that one in the mirror, with those eyes that take us into the soul and beyond. It's huge. If we know ourselves, truly, we need know nothing else. It will all come to us. The second commandment, thou shalt not have any graven images. Well, I like graven images. If they come in the form of my car or my pearls or even my cats, right? But I think what was meant here is not so much that stuff as that we need to let go of our deeply held false beliefs. It is our job here in the process of cleansing ourselves through this life to look at the beliefs we hold and consciously decide, does this work for me? Do I really believe this? I know most of you are on this page because you're sitting here today. We're not exactly typical mainstream fashion thinkers, are we? Doesn't mean there's anything wrong with that. It just means that we've looked at that and we've considered additional areas. How about that? In science of mind, which is the area of study that I'm a minister in, we recognize what is called race consciousness. Now, the first time I heard that, I thought, oh God, great, I found a church I really like, and they're going to tell me that if your skin's a different color or you got a different sexual preference, you got to go home. I'm out of here if that's the case, because that's not my truth. What I found out was race consciousness is simply the consciousness of the masses, the stuff that's in that universal mind that's been sent there, amassed there over the years, the billions of lifetimes and experiences that have existed on this planet and who knows, maybe others. That's not my forte. I don't know, okay? What we know is that often there's stuff coming to us from that bin, that consciousness repository that came from an archaic mindset. And again, it doesn't work for us. It's a graven image. It's a crock of, well, you know, yeah, stuff, okay? We don't have to buy it. But the way we get out of it is by bringing it up, looking at it, and we make the decision. You don't make it for her. She doesn't make it for me. Okay? We each get to decide on our own. The third commandment, thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. Oh God, if moms could talk. We won't go any further. I want to tell you, I have an advanced degree in speaking the word of the four-letter vernacular, okay, if you will, still to this day, and I don't think that habit is ever going to wear out. In metaphysics, what we know is that the word name really means nature. It's about the very nature of something. And we also know that anytime we hear the word Lord, we can substitute another word for it. That is the word law. Here we understand the one great metaphysical law, which is the law of attraction. That law very simply says, what I think, what I feel, what I believe, and what I do is always going down that universal mind pipeline out into the world. It is what's creating my life. Now, if you think that's an extreme, just think about when was the last time that you had something come to your mind, or maybe a person you hadn't seen in a while, and boom, 2 days later, there they were, there was that situation. How incredible is that? You helped create that. We do that all the time. That's what the law of attraction is about, okay? We understand here that whatever it is we give wings to, so to speak, in terms of thought, feeling, beliefs, it's out there, and it, thought strongly enough, frequently enough, will manifest. Then I believe, too, that the idea of not taking the Lord's name in vain may be just a reminder that we must take seriously the very nature of this law. What I am sending out is all important, because it's not only creating my life, it's creating the consciousness that we see on the big screen. That's what's on TV. You don't like what's going on in the world? Change yourself. It starts at home. It really does. They get mad at me sometimes at Open Door for saying that. But truly, what did Margaret Mead say? It just takes a small group of a few concerned people to change the world. That's the truth. The fourth commandment. This one's long. I'm going to read it because it's got people in it. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shalt thou labor and do thy work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work, thou, nor thy son, nor thy daughter, nor thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, oh get ready, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger that is within thy gates. For I told you it was long. For in 6 days the Lord has made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, and then rested on the seventh day. Well, at face value, it's a great message. Take it easy. Take a break. Give yourself a concrete, defined time to do nothing, to allow that creative principle that is life itself to simply have its way with you. Go for a walk. Pet your cat. Well, the first two pets you get for free. Then if you're like me, you get bitten, right? Little jerks, okay? One of them bit me as I was leaving today. I'm like, really? I fed you 7 times and cleaned your waist up, too. He's got an attitude. I can't imagine where he gets that from. But here's the thing, kind of funny. Often the mention of family or relatives, that would be sons and daughters, in the Bible or even any sacred text, might symbolically represent thought, mental action, intellectual engagement, whereas the reference of cattle, okay, may speak to baser, more emotional areas such as the feelings. That's interesting, isn't it? Okay. That there are 7 days, too, may be a message for us. 7 is a number that often represents completion. Think about that. There's 7, or maybe more than 7 planets now, 7 chakras. I don't know. There's lots of 7 days of the week, right? The interpretation here could also be that once we've done our mental work, we've done our work in prayer, we're to turn it over. Let it go. Walk away from it. Get it. The divine has our back here. The work is done on our part. All we have to do is just release and let it go and keep going. It's not easy, is it? Whose wife was it that turned around and got turned into a pillar of salt or something? That would be me, yeah. The fifth commandment, we're almost halfway. Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. Here we find it important to remember that the writings of sacred literature may also be highly symbolic in nature. Father may represent, again, the conscious intellectual thought, whereas mother we know is feminine, the softer, more esoteric component, again aligning with feeling, perhaps. Thus we are instructed here to honor all parts of our beingness. Men, how well do you honor your feminine selves? Women, how well do you honor your masculine selves? If we do this, our time in the consciousness of God may be long. Of course it will be. We'll live a fuller, more complete life. And any time we do that, we will be healthier. Here, too, land may be referring to the ground of all being. That's another name for consciousness. So as we completely allow ourselves to live fully from all parts of who we are, we have this experience of living from a greater consciousness, more complete wholeness. The sixth one, I struggle with this, even this morning in the shower, thou shalt not kill. There's been a silverfish in the shower for 2 days. Yesterday as I got out, I said, find another home. This is mine, dude. He was still alive when I left yesterday. I thought he would be gone this morning, but he wasn't. And they're weird. They have long, thin legs that they stretch out and hold on to. This morning I said, this is your eviction notice. It's my house. I don't like to kill things. But what about in the face of self-defense? What about, like, poisonous snakes? Don't know about that. Perhaps our literal interpretation is just completely way off base. Our brothers and sisters in unity have a completely different notion of this concept, this commandment. They say that it is telling us that we can't kill. We don't have the ability to stop spirit. Now, yes, we can stop the pulse, the heart from beating. We can turn off the switch and unplug the power that lifts the vent that keeps a life perpetuated. But we can't stop God. That which is spirit lives always. We got a lot of static all of a sudden.
Yeah.